You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Today's episode is brought to you by our supporters on Patreon, including our Commodore class. That's Commodores Obvious, Bloodgroove, Torso and Pinches, Ironside, MD, Jacob, Griffin, Scuttlebutt, Matt, Roger the Jolly, Hartman, Gingrich, Lisa, Clan Roland, Big Beard, Willie P, Schmarls, Buggy the Clown, Leslie the Spice Chonger, The Admiral Benbow, Misfit, Madam Anita, Chairboat, Cannon Monkey, Axios, Gunsway Sally, Pitlock, Artemis Killmeister, The Sextant, Jack of the South Seas, Lost Again, The Navigator, Governor Roop, Gin-Soaked Jim, Workman, Rum Runner, Skipper, Sawbones, Scarlet Dawn, Hefe, Bull, Vertigon, Rumgut, and Bootstraps Bailey. Hello. Welcome to the Pirate History Podcast. My name is Matt. Thank you for listening. When we talk about shipping powers in the Age of Sail, we're really talking about three nations. If nation is the right word, you know, a nation-state was still a pretty new concept in 1700. But we're talking about Portugal, England, and the Dutch Republic. Naturally, they weren't alone. Places like France and Spain, Venice, Sweden, China, a bunch of powers all around the world had powerful shipping concerns, but Portugal, England, and the Netherlands, they built empires on the back of their shipping. That differentiates them from somewhere like Spain, who built, you know, the largest empire in the world, but they did so on land acquisition, agriculture, slavery, mining, extraction of wealth rather than shipping of wealth. The difference here, and there is a difference, is between a mercantilist empire and a proto-capitalist shipping empire, although I'm not sure I understand it enough to really explain it. But that difference doesn't matter here. That's not what we're going to talk about today. All of this is a really roundabout way of reminding you that Portugal, alongside England, had a significant presence in India in 1697. Remember that Bombay, modern-day Mumbai, that was a Portuguese possession until 1661, when Catherine de Braganza married King James II, or the future King James II. The King of Portugal included Bombay in her dowry, which in 1661 made it an English possession. But that doesn't mean Portugal was pulling out of India. Bombay was important but had never been her primary outpost in India. That honor goes to the city of Vasco da Gama, in a region called Goa, on the southwestern coast of India. Last time we discussed the Mary, a ship carrying a Captain Thomas Parker, now the pilot of Adventure Galley, and a number of Portuguese priests. After Captain Kidd absconded with Captain Parker and an unnamed Portuguese translator, the Mary sailed immediately for Bombay. They reported Captain Kidd and the Adventure Galley for piracy, which was technically not true. There had been a bit of, you know, piracy, but Captain Kidd made his men give it all back, and he had absconded with a couple of the crew of the Mary, and that is something that pirates did, but so did the Navy. Naval press gangs were currently roaming port towns all over the world looking for men they could impress into service. The Royal Navy had even impressed men from the Adventure Galley upon leaving London. And Captain Kidd did kind of, maybe, have a royal authority to do just that, to impress men into his service for his hunt for pirates. But Sir John Gayer and the English East India Company, they didn't know that. But even if they did, I doubt they would have cared. As soon as they had heard word of Kidd's piracy, they sent their fastest ship on to Goa to warn the Portuguese, or maybe the Mary herself sailed on to Goa. I've got conflicting sources on that. Either way, though, the Portuguese authorities in India were soon well aware of Captain Kidd and his depredations. Depredations against Portuguese subjects. And they cared even less about Kidd's supposed royal authority. Now, here in 1697, the Portuguese were allies of the English and the Dutch in the war against France. England and Portugal were old allies, though, predating this 9 years' war by decades. But in India, things were different. The Viceroy of Goa wrote King Peter II of Portugal, and his letter said about the English in India, quote, "It is believed that all Englishmen are pirates, who sell in Bombay all that they steal at sea. If our frigates meet with them at sea, they produce company papers, and we can do nothing with them. But when they come across our merchantmen, they rob them, and the company then excuses it by saying these are pirates." End quote. Much like the Mughal Empire, the Portuguese in India saw all Englishmen as pirates. And you know, they weren't without some merit in thinking so. The English in the Indian Ocean, including those belonging to the company, did have something of a spotty track record in that field. But here, they had a ship they could make an example of. The Portuguese sent out two ships to hunt down Captain Kidd in the Adventure Galley. This is episode 261, and dot the I's. When we left off last time, Captain Kidd had just departed Karawar in a sudden and surprising hurry. He'd had word that a rich, fat Mughal merchant ship belonging to Abdul al-Ghafir was on its way to Karawar, and Kidd decided to do something. What it was that he intended, that's hard to say. Was he hoping to capture some pirates who were hunting this rich, fat merchant ship, or was he hunting the ship himself? If we were trying to be impartial, that's not a question we could really answer. There are too many different variations of this story, depending on who's telling it. But, well, one of our patrons, Madame Anita, pointed something out recently. She mentioned that my opinion on Captain Kidd has shifted pretty drastically over just a few episodes. When he was getting drunk and offending Royal Navy officers for his own amusement, well, you know, that's just great. But now that he's ruling his ship through violence and fear, now that he's forcing his men to stay on board, I just don't like him very much. So I'm maybe not the best person to make an informed judgment on what Kidd was planning to do. You know, I've got a bit of a bias. Were I to try to make an impartial decision, I would remind you that Adventure Galley had been at sea for months now, just about a year at this point, and they had yet to take any prize of any consequence whatsoever. They had made no money to speak of, and they were running low on supplies, including, you know, booze. The men on board were ready to do something drastic. So it was in Captain Kidd's best interest to capture a rich, fat merchant ship as soon as possible, and it didn't really matter who it came from. As long as they weren't English, and you know, maybe if they were English, because this was no longer about staying in the good graces of the law, this was about staying in the good graces of his men and staying alive. A Mughal prize, though, would have been just the thing to sate his men's appetites. So I think, and I'm not at all alone in this, that Adventure Galley was on the hunt. I think that she was probably intending to head to the southeast, down the coast of India towards Aachen. That's where this Mughal ship would have been coming from. But the winds were not favorable. Instead, the ship was pushed back to the northwest, back toward Goa. Not ideal in Kid's situation, but, you know, they could recalibrate come morning. The crew spent that night, a quiet evening of the 13th into the 14th of September. They spent it with sails furled, waiting for the winds to turn in their favor. As the sun began to break over the horizon, while the crew still lay in their hammocks below decks, while the captain still lay nestled in his blankets, a cry broke the still morning air. Sails! Everyone on board was awake in a flash. The crew rushed to the deck and realized that those sails were not this Mughal ship they had been hoping for. Instead, they were European sails. And they were not on the horizon. They were close, almost within range. It turned out to be two Portuguese vessels, one smaller and one much larger. The smaller of the two, I think, would be technically classified as a frigate of 26 guns. It was light and fast and fairly well armed, but not exactly a powerhouse. The second of the ships, the larger of the two, that was a man-o-war with a full complement of 44 guns. Now, I don't want to cast too many aspersions on Iberian shipbuilding in this era. You know, Portuguese and Spanish shipmakers had defined the early days of the Age of Sail. But here in 1697, had this been a British or a French ship of a comparable size, I don't think that we would be talking about Captain Kidd today. I think we'd be talking about the notorious pirate Captain Cutlass Culliford. And I might mention, you know, offhand, about some foolish, rich magistrate from New York that got himself killed because he wanted to play hero in the Indian Ocean. Portuguese man-o-war and Spanish man-o-war, they were beautiful vessels. Floating works of art, they were covered in ornate woodwork, usually with a religious theme. You know, crosses and saints, images of the Virgin Mary, they were gorgeous and perfectly suited to intercontinental sea travel. They were fine ships, but with those 40 guns and all of that heavy woodwork and a large crew, and of course, you know, space for cargo because they had to be able to carry cargo, well, these ships could, without question, hold their own in a line of battle. But where they suffered, where they weren't exceptional, was the chase. A British ship of 40 guns, or, you know, French or Dutch, well, they would have been a lot more sleek. No ornate woodwork. No extensive cargo holds to carry Oriental spices. It would have been just guns and men with swords. And you know, we are talking about Captain Kidd today, so I don't think it's a surprise that he's going to get away here. The story, though, is not that he got away, it's how he gets away, and that's impressive. So as the men are still just waking up, realizing that these two ships are almost upon them, the larger of the two hailed the Adventure Galley. According to Captain Kidd himself, it was in that kind of, you know, lingua franca of the sea, the language of the hierarchy, if you will. The Portuguese man-o-war hailed him, saying, "From what seas are you come?" And Kidd replied, honestly, "From London." Then he returned the question, "Where you come from?" And the Portuguese ship replied, "From Goa." And then, after this brief exchange, the two Portuguese ships pulled back. And that was a bad sign. Any friendly ship meeting like this at sea, and the Portuguese should have been a friendly ship, but theoretically they should have stuck around for a while. You know, to share news, maybe to trade a bit, and the captains would probably share a meal and a couple of drinks, but that's not what happened here. The man-o-war moved to starboard, and the frigate moved to port, they were flanking the adventure galley and moving in as though they intended to attack. So Captain Kidd ran for it. You know, that's the move here, and I know that doesn't sound like much, but stick with me, this will get cool. Captain Kidd ordered his men to the oars, and they did it. They might not have been happy with Captain Kidd, but, you know, right now two Portuguese ships are clearly about to open fire, so they put their backs into it. The crew of the adventure galley pushed hard to the south to get out of Portuguese range, and they pulled it off, running down the coast, but those two Portuguese vessels gave chase. Now, early on, there wasn't a lot of wind for either ship, so Captain Kidd, with his men on the oars, managed to put a good bit of distance between himself and the two Portuguese vessels. But when the wind picked up and caught the sails of the adventure galley, that actually gave the Portuguese an advantage. They opened up as much sail as they could. They drew closer as the sun reached its zenith, and as the sun began to sink, they were right on Captain Kidd's heels. By the time dusk had settled over the water, the Portuguese man-o-war was within range. The frigate was apparently in range as well, but was unable to get a proper angle for the shot. However, that man-o-war could. She managed to get off a perfect volley. Six shots hit the ship at the waterline, exactly where you want to hit a ship, and the adventure galley began taking on water. Men had to rush below decks to close the holes that had been created by those cannonballs. It wasn't enough to sink the adventure galley, not with the crew doing their job, but it put a real scare into the crew. And that scare may have been just what they needed. The adventure galley, as dusk turned into night, managed to put a little bit of room between themselves and the Portuguese. Not a lot, but enough, some breathing room. All throughout that night, the chase continued. Captain Kidd managed to pull further and further away from the Portuguese man-o-war. But the frigate, on the other hand, the smaller of the two ships, well, she managed to close the gap. At these speeds, a man-o-war just couldn't keep up, but the frigate had adventure galley matched. She may have been faster, even. So when the sun began to rise on the second day of the chase, Captain Kidd made his move. What he did was something that most ships just couldn't do in the age of sail. It was really only an option for a galley. Kidd ordered some of his men into the rigging and others down to the oars. They had to work together and time it just right, but if they pulled it off... At Captain Kidd's command, the oarsmen to the starboard of the ship dipped their oars into the water and held fast and hard. Those on the port side dipped their own oars in and pushed even harder. Simultaneously, at that exact moment, the men in the rigging tied the sails down fast, held tight. Kidd himself stood at the helm. At the same moment that his oarsmen plied the waves and the men in the rigging held fast, Captain Kidd turned the wheel hard, alee. All of this at the same moment, this incredibly complex machine working together, the adventure galley began to turn, and turn quickly. It put a lot of stress on the ship, and this was the moment of tension. Kidd timed his maneuver here to catch a changing wind, a wind that would spell victory, if they managed to catch it, and if not, death. Kidd watched the sails, as did everyone else, waiting for the wind to pull them taut. The crew held their breath. Then, with a snap, the sails filled and adventure galley began to move. This was a success. It was an impressive moment. Captain William Kidd in 1697 pulled off what modern naval tacticians call crossing the T. That's when one ship positions itself in relation to another like the top of a capital letter T. It puts the other ship, the vertical line of the capital T in range of your guns, while your ship the top the cross of the T is free of danger. It's a move that became prominent during the Age of Steam, in the late 19th century and even into the 20th. It's something that naval warship commanders of the era all aspired to pull off. But those are ships with power, steam power at first, and then later on regular fuel. But Captain Kidd, here in 1697, pulled it off with sails and oars. It's a worthy bit of seamanship. It's why Captain Kidd, he's not just some New York socialite that managed to con his way into a commission. Whatever I may think of him, Captain Kidd is a hell of a sailor. And I don't mean to imply it was impossible to cross the T in the Age of Sail. It did happen, but it was rare, and when it did, it was usually thanks to specific circumstances in a battle of the line. In a circumstance like this, two ships involved in a chase, well, it's a gold star on Captain Kidd's resume. Now that the adventure galley was in a dominant position, Captain Kidd opened fire. His guns blazed away. They fired at will whenever they had a good shot, raining cannonballs down on that smaller frigate. In short order, and we're talking about minutes here, the sails of that Portuguese frigate were in tatters, the masts were splintered, and her crew were either dead or dying or in hiding. It was a sudden and undeniably decisive victory for Captain Kidd. Now, some of the members of the crew of the adventure galley wanted to board that Portuguese ship. They wanted to loot whatever goods they could find. After all, those are the spoils of victory for a privateer. But Captain Kidd wouldn't allow it. I suspect that had the circumstances been different, he probably would have allowed it. This was not a moral stance he was taking on attacking the Portuguese. This was practicality. A very large, very powerful man-o-war at full sail was still bearing down on them, and if they took the time to ransack that frigate, they would be caught. So Captain Kidd ordered the adventure galley to retreat to the southeast, back down the coast of India. And that man-o-war could have continued the chase, probably fruitlessly, but you never know. Instead, though, well, the frigate was in bad shape. She was taking on water, really unable to sail. So the man-o-war took all of the crew and cargo on board and towed the frigate back to Portuguese territory. Now, Captain Kidd, in this situation, had been fired upon first. He did not begin these hostilities, unless, of course, you count his ransacking of the Mary, which, you know, he told his men to give the cargo back. Nonetheless, whatever his guilt might be, Captain Kidd had just engaged in battle with a ship that belonged to a close and old ally of England. And he knew just how that looked, just how bad it made him look. But he put a brave face on it later on. Captain Kidd would tell the court sometime later, quote, "No Portuguese will ever attack the king's colors again." That was his justification. But, you know, speaking of the king's colors, a few days later, Captain Kidd and the adventure galley were spotted flying another kingdom's standard, in this case the French naval flag. It's kind of the polar opposite of the St. George's Cross. Instead of a red cross on a white field, it's a white cross on a red field. But they were spotted flying this French flag by an Englishman, a Captain James Perrin of the ship Thankful. The Thankful was a small East Indiaman, just a merchant ship, and she was flying the king's colors when she spotted this ship flying the French. To his credit, Perrin didn't run. He could have, maybe he should have, but, you know, I don't really know what Captain Kidd was trying to pull off here. Maybe he was trying to lure out French ships or French pirates or English pirates looking for a French ship, who knows? But all he found was Captain Perrin of the Thankful. Captain Kidd hailed Perrin and called him over to interrogate him, and what he wanted to know about more than anything else was the location of a ship belonging to a one Abdul al-Ghafir. Captain Perrin didn't know anything about any Abdul al-Ghafir or any fat, rich merchant ships in the region, so Captain Kidd let him go. But Perrin went right on to the English outpost at Bombay and told the authorities there everything. This was probably only a few days after word of Kidd's battle with a Portuguese frigate reached Bombay. By this point, it was made clear that Captain Kidd was willing to harass and attack and board English ships and Portuguese ships and Moorish ships. You know, the only kind of ships that Captain Kidd had yet to attack were the ships he was supposed to. For all of his many protestations, it appeared very much that Captain Kidd had no intention of hunting pirates or Frenchmen. It was becoming clear to Sir John Geyer and the entirety of the English East India Company that something was going to have to be done about Captain Kidd. I'd like to thank everybody for listening. I'd like to thank everybody who has helped to support the show, all of our patrons on Patreon, everybody who has left us ratings or reviews, and everybody who has recommended this show. You all make it possible. Thank you. The Pirate History Podcast is a member of the Airwave Media Podcast Network. If you'd like to check out some of their other fine shows, like Ben Franklin's World, you can do so at airwavemedia.com. Our theme music was, as always, The Old Captain by the fantastic band Brillig. You can find them at brillig.com.au. That's brillig.com.au. After you're done over there, why not check out our website at piratehistorypodcast.com. As always, most importantly, thank you for listening.
Live on in legend tonight.